you build a new product and you to explain it so that you can explain it in a couple of words, because like everything else, people are not willing to listen to. There is a very good person, Kai Peter, who was head of communications at McKinsey. And before I left, I just took half an hour of his time and asked, like, look, we intend to do this and that. And how would you do that? How would you approach that? And he said, listen, Thomas, so I understand your passion and Europe and savings and so on. But if I flip that story around, there is this like strange Georgian guy, a company which exists since a month. It's like sounds super fishy. And why would I trust my money to you? So we were one of the first like wild animals out there doing something.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Speak Like a CEO. My name's Lena Kelson and I'm here with Oliver Oust. Hey, Oliver.
Hey, Lena. Our guest today is Tamás Giorgadze. He's a well-known fintech entrepreneur and CEO and co-founder of Raisin. Tamás was a child prodigy, a real wunderkind, a chess master at 4, university degree at 15, and 2 PhDs before many of us had a clue what we wanted to do with our lives. And after 10 years at McKinsey, in 2012, he founded Raisin in Berlin-Kreuzberg with 2 co-founders. And over the past decade, he has grown Raisin into the leading marketplace that links private investors to savings products from all over Europe to give them access to the best interest rates. Welcome, Tamás.
Thank you for the invitation, Oliver. Excited to be here. Thanks, Lena.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. And with your background, you could have done anything professionally, I presume. So why dedicate your life to saving?
That's an excellent question. I think it has a couple of aspects. So first aspect is our core product is very open and pro-European. And coming from outside of Europe, actually, Europe is extremely positive connotation for me. So I like and I love open borders. I love the free travel. I love opportunities. I love actually being in different countries and kind of not feeling that they are as so much different. So in financial services, actually, Europe is not united at all. So there are borders and there are practical difficulties to do cross-border. So the basic idea was we have this opportunity of kind of on the regulatory side having the opportunity to offer things cross-border and to make them available without barriers to the customers, and no one does it. And then actually you ask yourself, why is it because it's impossible? Is it just it's difficult? That was like one part of it, right? So Europe is something positive, exciting for me, and I liked something which is actually in its core European and ignores borders and barriers. The other part of it is the like savings and investments, because we define this as our core product group. They are like the most penetrated financial product. So everyone has a savings account or a term deposit or even a current account. It's a way to save money without interest, but still. So actually, basically. Almost all Europeans, over 90%, have any type of those products. At the same time, from the consumer side, they are very limited. So they are limited to your own provider. You have high switching costs, limited transparency. You access to like better rates is you need to go through a third party comparison sites. You need then to open accounts at different places. And I personally also know people who say, like, I tried it for 2-3 years. It's just so challenging. Banks then reduce the rates. Then I need to have multiple passwords, transfer left and right. So though the product area is very, very large, actually simplification and innovation there was lacking for years. So kind of thinking was, look, it's relevant for everyone. If we build a great product there, then it has a massive impact. And like the total savings in Europe are around 14 trillion euro, so including the UK, so a very large market, and even a 0.1% or 1% difference. So like imagine we could make that much, but it's a massive impact on people's wealth. And so it's just 1% of it is 140 billion a year. That's excites me. So not the number itself, but that actually allows people to do stuff, to spend more free time, to take time off, to spend time with the family, do holiday, just relax. So I think that's the like immediate financial impact felt by many, many households. That was the other part of it, which I found exciting.
So when you break it down to its most simple statement, what is it that Raisin is, and what is it the benefit that it provides?
So Raisin will give you access to simple savings and investments without any barriers. And what it provides to you as a value add is that your returns on your savings become better while being a convenient digital solution.
Maybe you can walk us through your brand journey. You started out about 10 years ago. The brand Weltsparen is also very well known. There's Raisin Bank these days. So could you shed some light on the different brands you've created and how they're connected?
Oh, so we have a myriad of brands. So we have just recently merged with Deposit Solutions. So we have a number of consumer brands. So there is Zinspilot, there is Weltsparen, there is Savedo, Save Better. So of course, majority of it is history. In terms of there was a reason or a merger before, or a reason not to launch with a particular brand in a particular market. So thinking overall, I would spare that complexity out, but the previous thinking of Raisin and Weltsparen brand. So we started. So actually, when the idea was there, pretty soon, I had after a late night with a friend who is a brand consultant and actually one of my very very best friends. We had that name idea and which is a very functional product driven. Actually, it's on the one side, it's good because it connects directly to the product. On the other side, it's also limits, right? So it's Sparen is only savings. It's not, we have ETF products, we have pensions. So it's kind of good, but also limits you. So we had that idea before the company was founded and I kind of liked that, right? So it's a functional name. People can start something with it and it's easy to remember. And we launched in Germany and it kind of went well at the beginning, and then very fast we said actually the product doesn't live to its expectations if we do not launch it Europe wide and way too soon. So we launched across Europe with one website in all countries just 1.5 years after our German launch. And the issue back then was Weltsparen. So there was one thought, look, Weltsparen is like Volkswagen. So it's a German product, German engineered. We have to force all non-Germans to write it the proper German way. But on the other side, so mistypes on Google and to explain it because you can't really explain it and it's not easy to, and then the typing of it, it's not easy, right, for a non-German person. So we pretty soon came up with we need a general umbrella brand which works in all countries irrespective of the language and which is somehow can be associated with saving products. And Raisin has two parts. Banks understand it as raising funds because on their side they're raising funding through us. And actually the initial idea why Raisin was raise interest. So raise interest on your savings. So raise, so both of them positive and both of them it describes the marketplace dynamics, right? So both sides, and we try to give the best outcome to both sides. So the brand is has a meaning behind. It's short, it's simple to type in, and we kind of liked it because I like raisins, so I have to admit, and even French people like wine, so it kind of ticks all boxes. So and we decided to launch in all other markets with Raisin, while for me emotionally also to cut off the Weltsparen brand is difficult, because I think it's I would say it's established, customers like it, and then always with rebranding, you lose something. You lose part of ranking, Google ranking, you lose part of the normal traffic. Of course, you can redirect and so on, but the philosophy why we called it so and the simplicity, and it would be gone. So we decided and cling on unto that decision till now, so that we actually are Raisin or have introduced Raisin, so before the merger, as mentioned, as a universal brand in all markets except for Germany, where we have Weltsparen. But the product brands in Germany, like pension and bank, and so like this, the verticals beyond the savings product, we also name them Raisin. So there is Raisin Invest, Raisin Bank, Raisin. So in that regard, like all products and all foreign platforms are Raisin, except for the core German B2C savings platform.
Makes sense.
Sorry for the long story.
I would like to go back a little bit further too, because I think, so we're all based in Berlin, where I think fintechs are kind of a hot topic right now. You've kind of talked about the global impact a bit. But I would say overall, the whole fintech space is a little bit confusing and unknown to people even now. And I would just be interested to hear a little bit about kind of your journey from when you started to now in terms of how you educate people and kind of what your take is on the whole space in general.
Yes, so I think it's a good question. And I mean, back then when we launched, and it's like almost 8 years ago, actually, fintech space itself was very limited. I think no one called it fintech. Before us, there was Smava and Auxmoney, and that was it, the German fintech. So there was not much than that. So N26 came later, Solaris came later, Trade Republic recent. So we were one of the first like wild animals out there doing something. We had actually two challenges. So it's a market, it's a two-sided marketplace. So you need actually to create positioning, content, like meaning on both consumer side and the bank side. And those two sides are very different, right? So the banks want like knowledge, content, precision, efficiency, reliable operations, and you need to transport it, right? So you need to create unique content, you need to stand for something, you need to have great experts at your side, you need to package the product and sell it nicely, but really that part looks at different things than the end consumer part. And for the end consumer part, it's like usual things. Is it safe? So those guys sit somewhere in Berlin. So now we sit in Kreuzberg. Back then we were in Prenzlauer Berg, and one of the first journalists wrote in a souterrain. So it was really in a one-room cellar. So how do you trust those guys' money, right? So and we had to overcome first trust, second product understanding, because the product didn't exist before that nowhere. So it was globally first like multi account funding or multi savings product platform. So how you fund the first account, and then from there you select, and like what are the timings, and how does it work exactly? So and how is this taxation work? So you build a new product and you to explain it so that you can explain it in a couple of words, because like everything else, people are not willing to listen to. So yeah, the challenges were slightly different, but we really tried to address those challenges like one by one. So on the bank side, we built up a good way to communicate with them, both by producing unique content, but also being present on the conferences, having the seniority in the team, and also having grouped reliable partners around us. We worked with a servicing bank very, very early on, so we decided not to try it standalone without a grown-up partner, exactly on the opposite. Also in terms of the software usage, we took existing large Swiss software provider, which works for a lot of banks. And on the consumer side, we tried it slightly differently, right? So on the consumer side, we always said it's never, and some providers which went into our space do it differently. It's never, the money is never with us. It's always on a bank account. It's always protected. We never have access to your money. We don't, we are just a service provider who tries to get your order, get it efficiently to the bank, and take care that the payments are received and everything is confirmed. So that's our part. But we never touch your money. We never tell you what to do. We never involve in your financial decision. We just help you in transporting money from A to B. So and having good offers. So we're sourcing good offers. That's what we're doing. Right. So,
I mean, the message market fit is very clearly there. I love this. How you tailor make your messages to B2C, to B2B. And all in all, from the outside, you have a very professional organization when it comes to communication. You have great people in the team, great leadership, and you can see how you know, why Raisin is a success story. I was wondering, now, 9 years ago, you and a few others founded the company, and I've heard that you, you know, took charge of communication sometimes yourself at the time. Obviously, when you start a company, you do everything, you know, you're in charge of everything kind of thing. So it's normal, but I'd love to hear from you a little bit about the early days and your approach to communications and maybe what the next milestone was. At what point did you say, right, we need someone who's dedicated to communications now, who can really focus on this, a professional from the outside?
A very good question. So in the early days, it doesn't make sense, right? So you hire someone who doesn't know the product, and there is a high risk of failing, and maybe the product is not the product. So you try to do it yourself. And we have done it a bit, like I have two co-founders, Michael and Frank, and we looked a bit like what's the passion, or what's the area I least want to do, so I don't do it, and then let's toss other areas around. So I picked up the communication, and there was a simple reason. So there is a very good person, Kai Peter, who was head of communication at McKinsey, and before I left, I just took half an hour of his time and asked, look, we intend to do this and that, and how would you do that? How would you approach that? And he said, listen, Thomas, so I understand your passion and Europe and savings and so on, but if I flip that story around, there is a Bulgarian bank somewhere out there. There is this strange Georgian guy, a company which exists since a month. It sounds super fishy, and why would I trust my money to you? So any journalist wants to, no one will be praising you. And this is I could write 2-page story of how awkward and bad this is. And it smells like fraud. Maybe it's not fraud, but it smells very close to it. So that he said, you could do product-focused communication, but I wouldn't do that because that causes a lot of questions, and then you are just in defensive mode. And then look, you have just one other option. It's a person-centered communication. And you have you, and you have this Wunderkind story, and it's kind of exciting, and people like it, and it's very hard to attack a person you don't know. So that for the beginning, until you have a solid product, tell the personal story. And it's loosely connected to your product, but people typically do not attack a person. So we consciously then put myself in front. I do not like this. So I'm awkward in way of, I don't like to tell my personal story, and Wunderkind, it's so long ago, it doesn't matter at all. So, but we kind of said it's the best story we can tell. So that let's use it extensively. And we used it for the first year quite a lot. So stories were always intertwined. So a personal story and then the product at the end. And it wore out at some point in time, right? So because Wirtschaftswoche has written it, Brandeis has written it, and so on. So you do not write the same story again, and you don't write, oh, there is this Wunderkind, we wrote again, and we write again. So we needed a new story. We needed a more professional, grown-up communication in terms of then communicating much more about the product, the core topics which we have. The core topics are a European single market is not finished at all. So there are a lot of barriers to it. And there are a lot of other passion topics, right? We were fighting a lot for simplification and of ESOP schemes in Germany, so of employee participation. And we chose those topics and said, let's make it a more professional communication than we had. And it's not about Thomas. It was never about Thomas. It was just a way to place the story in the least controversial way. But we need to renew that story, and we had also confidence that the company will survive, and we had a very good Series A, and so on and so on. And then we Nadia was our first head of communications, who had also large impact on how we do things and how we address those.
What would be some of your advice from that experience for maybe other startup founders that are trying to get pitched or trying to get some kind of coverage in the media when they don't really have a story to tell and people don't really know who they are? How did you kind of find the fit that worked for you?
I think it's a great question. And a lot of I am also a passionate investor, was a passionate investor with a lot of startups. I gave up on it, but actually a lot of then founders ask how do we do this at the beginning? And we are the product is not great yet, but I want to be on the radar. And so I think the answer to that is I tried always, like when we do press releases, I'm still very much involved in that. And then I really ask, like, look, you are a journalist, you're getting hundreds of those things. So what's unique? So like, why would I write about this? So I have just a limited time, and probably two or three stories are set. I have to report about whatever, Deutsche Bank quarterly results and another thing. And I'm picking one out of 100. Why this? So how is this unique? So, and like, what's in it for my periodical, right? So how does it fit to my readers? So, and the answer is always different, of course, but like a lot of press releases and our own stories I read and third party stories, they are just like me, right? So that's, yeah, that's another story which I read, like another partnership or whatever, or another expansion into something. So, but why is unique? Like, why is this one a breakthrough or first of its kind? Why does it change people's lives? And so on. So like, try to get to the nugget which makes the story interesting to the receiver, to the journalist who says, wow, that's exciting. That's something new. I've never heard about it. So in my case, it was Wunderkind, exciting, like, and a foreigner and a migrant. So like, what it's a kind, like nice kind of thing, and turn cloak from whatever McKinsey greedy guys towards fintech startup for the consumer. So you can spin a story around that. In other cases, it's different stuff, right?
The way you talk about it, I mean, it sounds like you're a PR professional. It's crazy to hear you talk about it like it's so obvious, because I don't think it is to all founders. What I was curious is, do you think this is something you learned during your time at McKinsey, or is this just something that was intrinsic or intuitive to you?
Wow, that's I like actually, so I do not like communicating, but I like talking to people, understand their motivation. So how does it come that I'm interested in like personal motivation of the counterparty is actually also in McKinsey, but also at Raisin very long. I was doing myself B2B sales to the banks, and basically like how you sell a product, a very, very good product to a bank, it's very personal. Because the personal agenda of that person in no way connects to the bank's agenda or bank's optimization of EBIT or whatever. So if you start there, you're already lost, right? So you need to find a reason for that person to take a decision, which always entails risk. It's a risk of failure. It's a risk of this fintech company is not reliable. My manager doesn't like it, whatever. He's taking a personal risk. And you need to find the right motivator. And the motivators are different. So some want to be a hero, like whatever. It's a financial innovation, and I'm spearheading it internally. And like, I'm the super cool guy in jeans and sneakers, and I want our bank to be the most modern in the country, so you can sell that story internally. There is someone who is like really whatever. We have a lot of European fans, really. It's saying like, look, I understand what you're building. It doesn't really matter to us, but I like kind of want to support it, right? So I like it that it's borderless, and it's like, and it's against all those nationalist parties, and you have other people's motivated by like something completely different. So really business-wise, I need to achieve that funding target. It's difficult for me. Maybe you can help me. Maybe there is some, and then you have follow-on discussion, like maybe there is some success criteria for me achieving my funding target, but those things are very different. So like in all my situations also, because I've done so much sales in the past and also now and also at McKinsey, because as a partner, you are doing sales practically. So that in all my interactions also with employees and with colleagues and with the journalists and with the politicians, I try to get to their personal agenda. So what would drive that person to take personal risk? To be a friend, to do a project with me together. So that's a bit like how I look at things, including our own press releases. So
super interesting. I love how you you know, grasped the concept of personal branding for founders at the beginning, and then obviously things moved as you professionalized as a company and grew as a company to more company-based communication style. I wonder whether you see there's an opportunity here now going forward for the next phase of Raisin for you to take more of a prominent role again. I could see you easily in breakfast TV explaining to savers how to make the most out of the financial opportunities, because a lot of people are insecure, they don't know. obviously you don't have that trust problem anymore because you're well established in the market. So I could see you really taking a thought leadership role even more than you're doing at the moment. And that could be transported by you personally as the leader of the organization. Is there something that crossed your mind or something you're thinking about just out of curiosity?
So like my belief or thinking is rather we need to make us broader, to make us stronger. So like not personalize it. So I think we are all exchangeable. And if I make myself unique as a person or a brand leader or something, that's just the wrong way. Because the company becomes dependent on me. I'm like as good as I'm an employee who wants to be like unique, I'm also a shareholder and I have shareholders' interest and my employees are my shareholders. So I want to the maximum to make myself actually not necessary in that position. So for the last 3 years, we try to we have extremely strong management and we try to put people in front who are much better than me, like both in terms of content depth, in terms of strength of communication, clarity of messaging. So examples. So Katharina, who is our fourth managing director, being not founder, she joined our ranks. She was speaking this year at Handelsbank Bankengipfel, which I like. It's the main event of the banking scene in Germany. And of course, for us as a banking partner, it's a very important event. I didn't take that opportunity, and I think it's like she does it better than me. So, and or Benedict, who is leading our like B2B partnership efforts, he talks always on Money Life. And I think it's great because he is much deeper into the topic and he's the go-to person when a partner says, look, I want to have a great savings product from third-party banks in my front end. This is Benedict. So I would be just a transmission mechanism. So transporting someone else's message and then transporting back to him. So I think I do not believe in this like big leader and standing. So of course, as a leader, you need to stand in difficult situations. You need to support people. You need to support people to let them grow. But at the end, the decision is that there are like 10 great leaders or 20 great leaders or 660 great leaders in the company.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So thanks for elaborating on that strategy. I totally agree that having a strong branch and a great team is a preferable strategy. But I do see a role for you to be on breakfast TV, just to put that on record. I think that would be fantastic. And I think people need that kind of advice. But that's just as on the sides. Now, you've grown the company from a few people, from 6 to 600, say. You've raised hundreds of millions. You convinced many, many banks to work with you, many, you know, hundreds of thousands of consumers. What have you learned over the last 9 years that now makes up so that the basic fundamental principles of communications that you apply to many different situations every day?
So I think there are a couple of things where we as a company have to agree because that's the way we do business together. And so one of the underlying principles is on the employee value proposition side, we are extremely and brutally transparent. That's important internally and also externally, because whatever you transport internally, that's automatically transported externally. So people do not hide behind something else, do not hide their numbers, do not hide, because there is no punishment here. So we learn together, right? There is an upside. We made a quote-unquote mistake, which was not a mistake, but it's a learning opportunity. And if you help me learn, you are a great person. So right, let's tackle it and let's do it next time better. So that's why like I expect transparency and I want to give like full transparency. So today we had 1 hour session on our strategy. And it's like first hour of 4 hours, because we had last week a 1.5 day management offsite, and we do a 4 hour debrief in total on what happened there. So we try to be to the maximum transparent, and for this communication is essential, right? So you're communicating then left and right and explaining and taking time for individual worries and the perception. The same is true for the public communication, because there is nothing you can hide at the end. So, and if you have issues in the business model, or you need to tackle them openly, right? So you need to name it, you need to say, and sometimes people who like come from the same consulting background are very insecure overachievers, and they do not like something which they do not have an answer or hypothesis on. And I actually love doing that. I say like, look, there is an issue. I know it, you know it. I do not have an answer. But let me come back once I have, and if you have a great idea, let's do it jointly. So that also like tackle the unknown and say clearly where you lack an answer and where you lack a solution. So being transparent on the great things, being transparent on the things which work out, but being also transparent there where you either you need to improve or you just don't know the answer yet. And the tool for this, for transparency, is of course communication, different formats, different audiences, different messaging types. So that's like why I think and how I think about communication's role.
Yeah, I mean, I think the role of communications is so important and for different aspects as well. One thing I would just be curious to know. So I think lots of companies right now are suffering from some kind of like brain drain, you know, or struggling to find top talent, particularly when it's in the tech industry, like all across Europe and the world, basically. How do you use communication to basically encourage people to get to know your company, to start the hiring process, to basically decide that this is a company that they're excited about?
Oh, very good question. And I thought a lot about it, so I can talk for an hour on this topic. So I think like there are like three things probably. First thing is in the modern world, there is no employer for life. So like it doesn't exist anymore. Even in Japan, it doesn't exist anymore, or in France. So you are a station in someone else's career and professional life. And ideally, he goes away, looks back and says, like, this is the most fun, the most productive, the steepest learning curve. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. So it's an era in my life. So that's the end product or an outcome. To get there, it takes just one thing. So you need to keep people growing. So if they stop growing, they will be first bored, and boredom is like really bad. The second is their market value doesn't grow. So if they do not acquire new skills, they like grow with the next challenge, team lead role, whatever. It can be a different thing, budget ownership, opening up a new market. They will be not only they will be bored, but their market value stagnates, right? So if they go out, then they are like at more or less the same level. So if their market value and their knowledge and their potential grows faster inside the company than outside, they stay. So like if we want that, or if our vision is to make people look back and say that was the best time in my life, at the same time we want them to stay, we do not want them to leave. So if you're just optimizing for one, we do like great parties, half a year later everyone goes out, they didn't change professionally, and says it was so good, we were drunk all the time, we went to best parties, but nothing changed in my life, right? So ideally they stay also, and staying you can only ensure by growth, both professional growth and personal growth. So that's actually what you want to have inside, and then you need to transport it, right? So there is a new person coming in, you cannot explain that like philosophy first and then like make it credible, right? Because that story anyone can tell. And then we spend really, really, really a lot of time to say, like, look, how do we create that experience, that growth experience? Our employee value proposition, it's also on the website, says your growth is our growth, and we really mean it. So we give people free time every year and own budget on training and coaching. We have a coaching program inside where every year top talents, 10 to 15% of the employees, are getting like extra treatment, everything, including personal coaching through myself or other managers. So I have 3 to 4 to 5 people whom I'm coaching monthly, at least an hour personally, and a lot of other things. So we bring in CEOs for breakfast of like the most prominent companies. We support former, so like I also personally invest in some alumni who want to start their own business, and so on and so on. So we try to make this journey enjoyable and at the same time that they grow all the time. And then, of course, we communicate it and we give examples. We let also like not only in the interview process, we not only the interview, but let them talk to current employees and open up that one and like individual one-to-one feedback and ask like, how is the life inside Raisin DS? So that's a bit on the like how we think about attracting and then retaining, because the retaining part is the harder part. Attracting you can do simple. You pay the highest salary, go out and say, look, we're a unicorn, we're a great company, we're giving you the best salary out in the market, but then you cannot retain.
That's a really good point. And how do you get that point across to potential employees that you're all about growth and we look after your development? I mean, good developers say? They get so many offers each week and they tend to ignore most of them. But how do you cut across and, you know, that they take a look and think about joining Raisin?
I think one thing is like we try to impress both professionally, but also like personally. We like, I do not want to have colleagues whom I do not find likable. So in that regard, and that forces you to be likable as well, right? So to be honest, to be open, to ask personal questions, to be interested. So we try to do maximum of that in the interviews, and also professionally. So I mean, the level of expertise in the company is quite high. We have a lot of former McKinsey, including McKinsey partners, there. So like as a young junior analyst, in how many companies do we have like ability to work directly with like former very strong like top senior consultants and 15% best of them. So, and also like on the product side, so we have extremely good product people. We send them exactly in the interviews, and they impress both personally and they are likable, but also professionally through expertise, through things they know, and the interview, and then you create a bit of interest in finding out more, right? So, wow, that's an impressive person. He works there. Maybe it's really fun to work with him, right? So maybe he's really knowledgeable, and I spent with him some time and I learned from him. So like to showcase this learning opportunity in real life by having also very, very good people in interviews and also telling the story, right? So we also openly tell, look, we will probably not have this highest salary on the market. We will have a very attractive employee option package because we believe in, we should be owners all of this company, and we will have a very good learning experience, right? So we will not give you all the perks out there. Like that is important for us, that is less important for us, right? If you tick the same way, be our friend and be our colleague.
That's amazing.
Thomas, that was some really great advice, and I feel like we could probably talk forever about everything that you're doing at Raisin because it's so exciting, I think, on the fintech side, on the communication side. Also with your consulting experience, I feel like you have actually a lot of wisdom to offer. Before we wrap up, what would be your final piece of communications advice for people listening?
I think like for me, it's I hate public speaking, so I really hate it. And I think one thing is you always need to go where it aches a lot and where the real pain is. So I try to force myself, although I really, really dislike it, to kind of do it more often. So to do exactly the opposite of my comfort zone is. And it's the same in the communication, right? So you need to learn to become better in those things where you are really bad. Because in those things where you excel, you probably will stay good, and you need not to train that muscle, but really do other uncomfortable stuff. Like when it's a bad message, deliver the bad message. When it's a difficult situation, be on the front line. When it's a difficult interview, take that interview yourself. Do not answer it per email. We had crisis situations, and also myself, and I'm also telling Nicole, look, let's call the journalist, because probably like you cannot in 5 bullet point questions transport what he actually means, and you cannot go into a discussion and explain him like that's the situation and this is the shading of it and this is what really happened. So you do not do it per email and you don't do it per written interview. So that's my advice. So take the challenge and grow with the challenge, with the communication challenge, because that makes you just better and more prepared for the next one.
I love that. Thank you, Thomas. And what many people know about you is you're a fintech expert, you're a master in business, you're a numbers guy. What few people probably realize is that you're an absolute communications expert. So thank you very much for sharing your insights with us today. It's much appreciated. We'll take away a lot of what you said, and it was a fantastic conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Oliver.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Lina.
Thanks everyone for listening, and see you all next week.